Okay. All right, so now calling this meeting to order. The first line, the first item of business is approve the minutes. I move to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
A second.
Great. Is there any discussion about that?
So the one thing I noticed is item 7, the adjournment,
yep.
is just the vote is 2-0. I don't actually specifically remember, but there were 3 of us, so I assume there was.
We actually didn't hear the third vote, so I wasn't sure what you had voted.
That's it. What Mike is saying is that we never, I guess, heard if you voted to adjourn. So do you want to be on the record?
I don't actually remember if I said anything, but I certainly supported the adjournment.
Okay, great. We appreciate that clarification. Any other amendments to the minutes? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Great. So the minutes are approved. Moving into the 3 loans that we will be approving, is there a motion? I move to approve the loans. Is there a second?
A second.
Great. Rich, do you want to maybe before we get into discussion just share the overview of
the
loans?
Sure. There's not much to talk about today. The Elk Mound loan, number 2, it has some road work and some equipment purchases. Otherwise, you know, the other ones are pretty standard loans.
Okay.
These were made before we had an investment committee meeting on Friday where we voted to lower the interest rates once again to meet market expectations. And these 3 borrowers decided not to start the process over, and they want to move forward at these rates because timing is an issue for them.
Great. I don't have any questions. I was just going to ask about the capital project, and you explained that. So, any questions on your end, Josh?
No.
All right. No more discussion. All those in favor of approving the loan say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye.
Aye, Josh.
Great. The loans are approved. So, no old business. Moving down to new business. So there are a handful of things that we need to cover under new business dealing with this very complicated but yet important land transaction. And before we begin, I just want to give the BCPL team, whoever created Exhibit A, just to say well done, because I think that really puts the justification to light in a somewhat simple picture, so we know at the end of the day, when you look through items number 4 through 8, at the bottom of overall changes, that's exactly what we're getting. So between transitioning non-productive land, gaining access to landlocked land, and then gaining acreage to help ensure that we are more productive with timber, I think it's a very good way of us summarizing this. So I guess I'm just kind of thinking about before we go into maybe formal motions, maybe we can just provide an overview and talk about it, but I'm looking at legal, at
yes.
counsel to figure out how is the best way that we want to approach this section of the agenda.
I think it would be great to talk about it on an overall 20,000-foot basis. And first of all, I agree with your assessment on whoever put this together. Mike Krieger did a fantastic job.
Good job, Mike.
And in fact, looking at this, it's amazing to think about what Mike started with, because Mike started with just a vague description from me and some chicken scratch about the need for a diagram to show what was moving
yeah.
where, because there are a lot of moving pieces here. And sometimes when it's depicted graphically, all the pieces start making more sense. So thank you again, Mike, for doing a great job on that. So in this particular situation, we do have a number of moving pieces, and what we're looking at doing is a number of exchanges together with a purchase. With respect to the exchanges, we've had a couple of them in the works for a while. The we have some parcels that the National Park Service had been expressing an interest in because of the fact that they were, one piece is on the Namekagon River, and the other two are on the St. Croix. And some of these are the only unprotected stretches of those rivers that are out there. And so, but the National Park Service cannot buy directly from the state under that particular law. And so that creates some issues of its own. And so we had started talking about doing an exchange with the National Park Service, but trying to line up, you know, some particular parcels that would fit in either direction doesn't work as well as taking a piece of a much bigger transaction. The same thing with the Northwoods Land Trust. In essence, we had a parcel on Sac Lake that the DNR had looked at for years about protecting. But at the same time, because of the fact that the DNR's rules on what would be eligible for acquisition, it didn't fit into a project boundary. And the Northwoods Land Trust said that they were very interested in acquiring this property and protecting it. And if the DNR ever someday was interested, yes, someday they would be interested in conveying it. And the final one, the Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company, this is something that MICA deserves an incredible amount of credit on. We have a lot of land up north that not only does it have some issues with it, in some cases it is underwater. And so the Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company built dams on the Wisconsin River and overflowed those lands. In most situations, they had obtained a flowage easement ahead of time or acquired the land, but in some cases they didn't. And we had several parcels of land that had been flowed by these dams and were underwater. And for decades, we had been trying to get Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company to the table. And finally, MICA had convinced them that, hey, you've got some undetermined liabilities here. Are you showing those on your balance sheet? And finally, Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company realized it was far better for them to acquire these lands to resolve those liabilities. So we had three different, very different transactions, three very different partners, all of whom were interested in acquiring specific lands from us. And once we decided to look more closely at some parcels from Minocqua Timber, we realized that perhaps this could all be folded into the same transaction. And so in one transaction, we would be taking parcels that we had, conveying them to entities that really wanted those parcels, and those parcels were not producing any revenue for the trust funds whatsoever. And at the end of the day, it was reducing the purchase price that we would pay for those lands from Minocqua Timber. And ultimately, it was reshaping our land base into something that was more consolidated, more productive, and more accessible. And that's what we're trying to do with our land base overall. So, how's that for a 20,000-foot summary?
I think that's well done. So I guess, and Josh, I know that there's probably some questions about this, but I guess I'll just, Josh, turn it over to you to see if there's any questions. And I just have a question, and I see that it was mentioned in the proposed overview, which is about kind of the appraisal of this land versus what we're buying for, and it seems a little, like this seems a little high, and are we actually getting our money's worth? I mean, part of me wants to make sure that I get it, like we're getting access to land that's landlocked, we're increasing our overall productivity with timberland, but at like what cost is really actually acceptable versus we need to go back to the negotiation table and try to renegotiate some.
Excellent question. So the one criticism of the transaction that there could be is the fact is we had it appraised, the property that we're acquiring, and the appraisal came in at a price that the seller was unwilling to sell at. When we got the appraisal, we went to Minocqua Timber and said, this is what we'd be interested in. And Minocqua Timber said, no, we don't agree with that appraisal. You know, as we've looked at it, and we don't agree with the appraisal for a couple of reasons. We think that the timber is worth more, and we think the land is worth more. And after
Josh, can you hear us okay?
Yep.
Okay.
They had been holding fast to a higher number, and as we started talking more, they agreed to come down off of that number to a number that was $100,000 higher than the appraised value. But one of the things that we were looking at on our end is the appraisal is the measure of the property, what it's worth to anybody. And the fact is, these properties were worth more to us because of the access issue. Not only did the property, acquiring these properties, unlock values of our lands currently, but some of the properties that Minocqua Timber would be conveying to us, those were landlocked, and our property would be providing access to those lands. And so, in essence, we would be getting sort of a double bump on access value out of this transaction. So, again, on an appraisal, those numbers aren't reflected because the appraiser is asked to value what that property is worth to anybody, not to a specific buyer.
So to your point, Tom, we shouldn't be thinking about it at just like the price off the street per se. It's more about we have to also incorporate the now access to like productive timberland that we're gaining that currently we don't really have access to.
The fact is I start at the appraised value and I move from there because there are times that property may be worth more to other people, but for our purposes, it's actually worth less.
Right.
And there are sometimes it's just the opposite, and this is one of those opposite times where it's worth more to us.
Hey, Tom, would you note the our appraiser was contacted and put a value on the increased value to us by the virtue of increased access?
Mm-hmm.
What was that number?
I think it was $146,000, and then there was another increase in value of the property that was landlocked that we're acquiring that would also go up in value.
So it's almost like the difference in $100,000 is made up by the increase in value of over $146,000, not to even add the timber revenue
right.
that we can generate on top of that.
Exactly.
Appraisers uniformly discount land value if it doesn't have access.
Yeah.
And so the additional asset access, Tom is right, $147,000 to our lands,
yep.
and about $65,000 to the Minocqua timberland that we're acquiring, and their estimate for an increase in asset value
right.
by virtue of access.
During the time that I've been here, those discounts on landlocked properties have ranged from 10% to 40%.
Sure.
But the fact is, those discounts are going up because it is becoming more and more difficult to get access. 20 years ago, northern Wisconsin was dominated by large paper company holdings. Plum Creek owned 500,000 acres up north.
Mm.
But those bigger holdings are breaking up, and as they break up into smaller and smaller pieces, the people acquiring them are setting aside their own little piece of kingdom, and they're not allowing people to go across, and it's creating more and more issues. In fact, in this particular situation, we have some land up there that we were planning on holding a timber sale on, and by consummating this transaction, we are ensuring that we can do that timber sale without disruption or incident, because we definitely will have access.
So, I mean, that answers a lot of my questions, because when I think about tax dollars being used during these kind of transactions, I'm like, how much are we paying it versus the appraisal? And if it's an increase, at what cost? So knowing that at the end of the day we're walking away with greater value, both from an access as well as timber revenue, I think that, while it's always nice to get what the price is appraised, I think between increasing our access, increasing our productivity from timber, but on top of that, also getting rid of this non-productive timberland, we can't negate that when you've got almost 1,000 acres on the books that we're going to be able to get to now get off the books. Swampland isn't very helpful to us. But do it in a responsible way. To me, I think that this checks enough boxes that makes it a worthwhile investment. But, Josh, I guess I just turn it over to you to see if you have any questions.
First of all, thank you for asking the questions you did. The question I have just relates to the exchanges and why there are exchanges rather than just the direct sale and then sale from us to the others. And I understand that National Park Trust has to do exchanges. Did I understand you, Tom, to be saying that Northwoods Land Trust likewise has to be done through an exchange?
So BCPL can sell directly to other governmental units under state law. And so we could sell to the federal government, we could sell to a county, we could sell to the state, we could sell to a municipality. But for the federal government, it starts out as they are operating under certain federal laws, and it's that federal law that prevents them from buying directly from the state. I believe that federal law was set up at a time when they assumed that there would be no reason to buy from the state because, you know, these special lands would probably be owned by the DNR or something like that that would be already protecting them. I don't believe that law considered the fact that there would be an entity like ours that would be holding waterfront land on some of these special waterways. With respect to the Northwoods Land Trust and the Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company, we cannot sell directly to either one of those entities. If we sold those properties, they would have to go through a public auction or a sealed bid. And both of those entities were very skittish about such a situation because of the fact that they have specific interest in that specific parcel, and they were very comfortable paying whatever the appraised cost of it was, but they were very concerned about how this would work with respect to someone else that might come in. With respect to Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company, there is one other element that came into the picture. And that was the effect of a statute 2411 sub 3 that requires BCPL to retain certain rights on sales of public land. The AG's office had opined that statute does not apply to exchanges, and one of the reservations in that statute is water power rights. Well, if you look at Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company, they are specifically acquiring that for water power rights. And so for them, an exchange was paramount because of the fact that then under those circumstances, statute 2411 sub 3 would not apply. Did I answer your question?
To some extent, yeah. So I understand why those companies might prefer to do exchanges. But I guess from our perspective, with respect to the 138 acres that Northwoods Land Trust would be buying and exchanging, and the 185 acres that Wisconsin Valley would be doing that with. I mean, wouldn't it also be an option for us to buy those acres directly and then do a separate sale of land to Northwoods Land Trust and, well, not necessarily to those entities, but to open up the land up for auction?
So for Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company, they do not want to acquire that land subject to that statutory reservation, and the only way for them to acquire it from us is to do it through an exchange. And so for them, again, they are acquiring that land to get rid of a liability on their books. And so that was the driving factor in that transaction, and to do that, it had to be done through an exchange. With Northwoods Land Trust, you are correct. In essence, we could choose to sell that to the highest bidder. Perhaps there is someone that would come along and pay above appraised value. As Northwoods Land Trust had had indicated that they are buying this to preserve this land and someday perhaps convey it to the DNR. We felt that what we were doing was making the best use of our assets and trying to do that in an ecologically responsible manner.
Just so I understand, I mean, the legal requirements that apply to the transfer and what the terms of the condition are different in circumstances involving exchanges as opposed to circumstances in which we are making a sale, is that right?
They are slightly different, yes, and one of the biggest differences is in this applicability of certain reservations on the lands.
Do we know why there's a difference between those two?
Josh, are you getting feedback on your end? Because we're getting a lot of feedback on our end.
I'm not. It must be from my end. I was just asking if we know why there is a... What the reasoning is behind the law being different for exchanges versus sales?
At the time that law was first crafted, on those restrictions was 1909. It was amended in 1911 and amended again in 1951. And during all those years, VCPL had no power to do exchanges. Its authority to do exchanges didn't come until 1985. And so the power to do exchanges came long after that statute was put into effect on sales.
Jess, any other questions from your end?
Well, what's the timeline on this thing? In terms of moving forward?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your question.
I was wondering what the timeline is from on your end in terms of how soon the transaction needs to happen.
Well, we'd like to get it closed as soon as possible, let's put it that way. Each of the different transaction partners have their own particular timelines. I think the one that I would worry the most about is the National Park Service, because their funding seems to be a little bit questionable, and so the sooner that can get closed, the better. With the Northwoods Land Trust, I think they're on a longer timeline. With respect to Minocqua Timber, I think at any point in time, if they found someone who was willing to pay more for the land, I'm sure that they would walk away. So the last one is the Wisconsin Valley Improvement Company. I think they've got a little bit longer timeline than the other three, because it was only recently that they had decided to do this. So, but they need to close this calendar year. But they need to close this calendar year. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the basic purchase of Minocqua Timber and the transfer of National Park Trust, that all makes sense to me. I guess has our legal team done an analysis on, having a third party purchase and then exchange land from us, and whether that should be treated differently from, a direct, the way that a direct sale is executed.
Are you asking whether DOJ has looked at this particular transaction?
Well, no, I mean whether VCPL has, and more to the point, whether this particular method of transaction is something that has been sort of approved previously. I mean, there are requirements in place for the sale of land, and so having a circumstance where a third party buys land and then does an exchange, you know, is a different mechanism than a direct sale, but it's, you know, it's similar in nature.
Yeah. So since 1985, actually, BCPL has been engaging in land exchanges regularly. So it's been for far longer that we've been doing land exchanges. We did not actually acquire the power to purchase land until 2006. And so, you know, BCPL has done both purchases and exchanges for quite a while. I believe there's been only one other situation where we've done them both in the same transaction. It's just that we haven't done this many exchanges and a purchase together. So, but in terms of the concept and structure, no, this is something that we've done before.
That includes where a third party has purchased land for the purpose of exchanging it with us?
In fact, virtually all of those exchanges that we did over the years involved the other party to our exchange acquiring different land because of the fact that there was never a situation where we were able to line up exactly what we had and what the other party had. So all of those exchanges that we were engaged in always had a third party involved in them, and some of them got really, really complicated. So this one is actually a little bit cleaner than some of those other ones that were not around.
Well, I guess my question would be then, is there any harm to the deal if we were to table a vote on this until the next meeting when Doug is present as well, or would that potentially undermine the deal?
Josh, this is Sarah. Just out of curiosity, what information do you think is missing and for to just like to table the deal? What additional information would be needed?
Well, so I didn't realize previously that we didn't, that one of the reasons for the exchange is that a direct sale was not, that a direct sale couldn't be conducted in the same way with Wisconsin Valley and with Northwest Land. And I'd want to give some thought to, you know, typically the auction process is what we would use for conveyance of land. And we're not doing that here. I just want to think through that issue as a policy and a legal matter.
So just to make sure I understand that these indirect, like these sales from, that would be then to land trusts, then to the national park, or the ones in which we can do directly, just rethinking that through?
Yeah, so as I understand it, we couldn't do this if we were buying all the Minocqua timber. And I understand with National Park Trust, that's because of federal law. But if we were to buy all the Minocqua timber land directly, we couldn't then just say we're going to transfer 129 acres to Northwoods, at a particular sales price, or the Wisconsin Valley at a particular sales price. But instead, those would have to be open for auction. Am I right in that understanding?
Yes, we cannot sell directly to Northwoods Land Trust. We cannot sell directly to Wisconsin Valley. Those would have to be put up for auction. And in the Wisconsin Valley situation, the other problem that comes into effect is Wisconsin Valley would not buy. They would not even bid because of the fact that the main reason that they're acquiring it is because they want the flowage rights.
Okay. Seth, I'm sorry. We're just getting some feedback from your end. Do you think we need to recall in, or are you guys okay?
I can hear you fine, but I can call back in if that's helpful to you.
That's clear. That's better. I just wanted to make sure. So I guess I'm just kind of debating this whole, I mean, there's two of us, right, and just thinking through how we handle this from a procedure perspective, because I want to make sure Josh gets the information he needs. I'm also sensitive about not moving forward in a timely way, just because there are so many pieces, and it's almost like it's like a thread on a sweater. If you pull it, you can unravel the whole thing. And that makes me worried from a perspective of a fiduciary, understanding that we've got to think about land, asset, revenue, and access. And so I guess I'm just kind of sharing this out loud because I'm just trying to kind of think through what's at risk by tabling it. But I think also, Josh, to your point, making sure you get the information that you need, so we're able at the next meeting to move forward in whatever best way is possible.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, do we have any concerns that, you know, voting on this in 2 weeks would cause the deal not to move forward, or...
Because of the fact that at any time Minocqua Timber can walk away, yes, there's always a concern. If I had to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, it's not a 9, but it's one of those things that you do worry about, that, you know, it took us a while to put these pieces together, and I know Minocqua Timber was getting anxious to move forward. And finally, when we got all the pieces in place just before the last meeting, what we tried to do was give the board a heads up that this was coming at this meeting and explain what to expect and what to look for at this meeting. And so I know all four transaction partners will be wondering what happened today. So.
Josh, just like thinking out loud about if the motion is to table and that's the way forward, what would be your recommendation on communication to these four partners to, like, from the BCPL?
Well, I mean, I think we should just tell them what we discussed, which is one of the board members wants to analyze the issue further, and we, you know, expect to follow up with them following our next board meeting. I mean, certainly if they were to say, you know, they need to have some resolution sooner than whenever our next meeting would be, I'd be happy to you know, schedule another meeting sooner than normal, you know, to get together to take a vote sooner if that's necessary to, you know, to make sure the deal moves forward.
So I guess the biggest concern is we just want to clarify the legality behind these transactions. Particularly the one where we can buy directly. Or, sorry, sell directly, the two in which we can sell directly.
That's right, yeah. I would also like to say, I mean, I take Tom's point that Wisconsin Valley becomes a non-buyer, basically, if the exchange option is not available And in the case of the Northwoods Land Trust, the benefit is that the land would be held in trust, you know, is one advantage to having Northwoods as a buyer. Is that right?
So Northwoods Land Trust might still bid if it goes to a sealed bid sale. I don't know for a fact if someone else would or not. And, like I said, the main reason for the exchange in the Northwoods Land Trust situation was more the fact that this was a parcel that was deemed by the DNR to have special natural area qualities. They had put it on their acquisition list. They had wanted to do the deal, but then their parameters changed for acquisition. And so Northwoods Land Trust had stepped up and said, okay, since the DNR at this point in time cannot acquire it, we feel strongly enough that this property should be preserved and protected, and therefore we're willing to do what the DNR cannot at this point in time. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, that is helpful. I mean, my inclination would be to table a decision on this now and to vote at the next meeting. But if to the extent that there's uneasy of the parties to have finalization of this, you know, before 2 weeks from now, and we need to meet earlier, I'm happy to do that as well.
So, I mean, Josh, I think if there's a motion to table, I just want to make sure that we're clear in what we need to come back. And so what it sounds like is if we move forward with a motion to table, there's two courses of action that need to take prior to that meeting for us to come up to a vote. The first is that, of course, it would be helpful for Doug to be here. So that would be nice to have the third board member. But then the second piece, more or less, is that you and DOJ is connecting with the BCPL to make sure that these transactions fulfill like the legal obligations that are required. I will tell you from my perspective, knowing that this is not the first rodeo in which this has been done since the 1980s, and also knowing that this has been done since we took on a new land ownership statute since 2006, I, as a fiduciary, am comfortable with this, but I turn that over to you as the legal expert on the board to make sure then that we get whatever is needed to make sure we can effectively check that box and move forward. So I just want to make sure that we're understanding the gaps in which we want to table for so we fulfill that. So the next time that this is on the agenda, we're able to have the right information that we need to move forward with a vote. So I just want to make sure we're all on the same page.
I think that makes sense.
Okay. So there is a motion to table, and in that motion, the consideration is that we will have three board members, but then that we will ensure the legality of this transaction for the next vote. Jonathan?
Could I just ask that we review the transaction instead of tabling it, just say defer to a future board meeting? Meaning, I'm thinking the Lakeland Times or something would pick it up, and then because the legality is not in my mind questioned at all. So to make sure everybody understands the process or understands in a review, you see what I'm saying?
So defer the vote for the next board meeting, which is September.
We're at an upcoming board meeting. It's scheduled earlier if people can make it. But I don't think there's any lack of legality. There is a lack of understanding of the full procedure, and we need to do a better job of explaining it, even though I think Tom's done an excellent job. You know, October. It's kind of a short time frame, so I fully understand. I just want to call it a legal.
So, Josh, the question is just from like a process perspective, is rather than table it, we make a motion to have the vote on this land transaction set for the 1st of October.
That's fine with me. The only reason, I guess, the only thing I wanted to raise is if you think, this is mainly a question for the staff, if you think that we might need to vote sooner. I mean, I guess we could always have a meeting and get the votes in if necessary.
We will check with our transaction partners, and we will let the board know if they need an answer sooner than October 1st.
So, Josh, do you want to make the motion?
Yes, I will. And please tell me if I get this wrong. I will move to defer the vote on this issue until the next board.
I second that. So.
All right. And do we have to vote in favor of that?
Yeah, two of us are in favor. Approved and seconded. Okay.
That's a good discussion.
All right. So, good discussion. Let's move down to routine business. Rich, how's the portfolio performing?
Quite well, thank you.
Great.
I included a report for the August month of August, and I think the big story to tell is that we had about $83 million in additional bond redemptions during August, which added to our cash position. But the remaining bond portfolio, which is well over $200 million, is well protected from additional redemptions. You know, I guess the way I put it is that the low-hanging fruit has been picked. You know, if market rates stay where they are, we expect only a few $100,000 in additional redemption in 2019 and perhaps up to $33 million in 2020. But compared to what we've experienced in the last several months, you know, that's something that we can handle. At the last investment committee meeting, the investment committee approved the commitment of $90 million to open-ended real estate commingled funds. We anticipate about $40 million of these funds will be invested within the next 30 days, with the remainder deployed in the first and second quarters of next year. We've also reestablished weekly purchases of public equity ETFs as the yields on that portfolio is higher than what we can expect in cash as of today. And that's my report. Well, I did want to talk about the interest rate change. We'll have to bring it up at the next board meeting for ratification of those changes. But at the most recent investment committee meeting, the board chair and the executive secretary agreed to reduce our interest rates in accordance with market conditions to maintain our market share in the state of Wisconsin. Those reductions were another 0.5% on loans that are from 2 to 10 years and 0.25% on longer-term loans. And so now the interest rates are at 3.25% for up to 10 years and at 3.75% from 11 till 20. And that's all I've got.
All right. Thank you, Rich. Jonathan. Okay.
I don't have very much to report today, but I did want to report that I, in the last week, have met with three legislators on varying topics. First, I met with Rob Swearingen and Jeff Merso to bring them up to speed on the status of the deer browsing issue and how we were approaching it. And both of them are very strong supporters of BCPL, but also very knowledgeable in the North Woods. And I just felt, and Tom and I discussed it, that they needed to really know what the deer browsing issue involves, and both of them concurred that the paper and the approach that we're taking seems to make a great deal of sense, so that was comfortable. Additionally, I asked Rob Swearingen, if he wouldn't co-sponsor a bit of legislation to assist us in our gifts and grants. We're the only agency, I believe, that does not have a gifts and Grants line in its budget. And recently we received, I think, some $26,000 from the Ruff Grouse Society to enable us to map all, GPS, GIS map all of our trails and roads and all of our holdings, which is of material value to us economically and value of value to the public for access. And, of course, that's the interest of the Ruff Grouse Society. Tom had to do acrobatics with DOA to enable us to manage this money, and it would be a whole lot simpler if we just had a line to plug it in. So Rob Swearingen agreed that he would co-sponsor it. I'm going to give him a concept paragraph or two. He also would also meet with Representative Nygren, the co-chair of finance. We may want to look for a Democratic and or a Senate sponsor. And then lastly, I met with Timothy Rantham, who's had some questions on school finance as it relates to a school district board that he sits on. And it ended up with, he said to me after we had a long hour and a half conversation, he said, well, what do you need? And I said, he said, if you could ask for anything, what do you need? And I said, I guess what I think we need most of all is a backup accountant in our shop. And so he immediately picked up the phone and was calling the co-chair of Joint Finance. And I said, whoa, let me do a position description and get this kind of organized a little bit. But he's very supportive, and I'm beginning, the more I travel around the legislature, the more friends it seems we have. And I'll say that Tom and all of us here have done a lot of groundbreaking in that regard. So that's my little report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? My report is really short, I think, just to kind of echo what Rich has said, that the investment committee has been busy between working on not only updating the investment policy, but also putting together some real estate criteria as we move into a new asset class. And so we are looking forward to doing that so the fund is protected and ensures strong returns as we move into a different market environment, I think, in the future. So I think that's been a really good, these have been good meetings, and I'm feeling really confident about the future of the fund. So that's it on my report. Anything about any future agenda items?
Well, we are going to be presenting the edited or proposed investment policy statement during October at some point, and so I just wanted to make everybody aware of that.
Okay. Well, seeing none, I move to adjourn.
A second.
All right, it's moved and seconded. There are now two people who have approved adjournment. Mike, we've got that from last time?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Josh.
We have to vote, Sarah?
Yeah, I said aye.
Aye, Josh.
Okay, good. We got you, Josh. It's official. It's in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.